Many people define being based as having the courage to speak unpopular truths. In a previous episode, I showed Pope Francis being based when he said women can't be priests or deacons.
For a little girl growing up Catholic today, will she ever have the opportunity to be a deacon and participate as a clergy member in the church?
No.
It's the one and only Digo Double G. But just because hard truths are often unpopular, that doesn't mean everything that's unpopular is a hard truth. Sometimes it's unpopular because everybody knows that it's wrong. In today's episode, I want to talk about how some people relish the backlash that comes from being based, and they love it so much they're unable to see that they aren't being holy, they're being heartless. And this kind of heartless mentality can send you to hell. First, there are people, including self-described Christians, who harbor a deep resentment towards women that leave pornography to become Christian. Here's an example. Bree Solstad used to create pornography, and I even blocked her account because of it. But one of her friends asked me to unblock her because she repented and she now fully embraces the Catholic faith. I asked Bree to send me some screenshots of how people treated her after her conversion, and it's tragic to see the bitter anger in these people's hearts. They write, "Former porn actress, you are a disgrace and not welcome in my church. No matter how hard she prays, it won't help her. God bans porn stars from heaven. God won't take you in, so hell will be waiting for you." I've seen lots of similar comments online, as well as people bashing me because I told Pearl in our debate that it's possible for women who leave porn to have healthy marriages. And Pearl thinks no man should ever marry a woman who's done this. People who think that say that these women are just permanently damaged goods who should be shunned. I saw similar reactions covering Fitness Nala's conversion to Christianity, which I've discussed in a previous episode. There's this idea that these women, especially those who made a lot of money on OnlyFans, haven't paid the price for their sins, and so they still need to suffer for what they've done. But if you think a person needs to pay the price before God can forgive his or her sins, then you do not know the gospel of Jesus Christ. And if you complain about people who got to sin and were still saved, even though you followed all the rules, you know what you sound like? You sound like the bad guys in Jesus' parables. That's what the older brother in the parable of the prodigal son complained about when his pride kept him from rejoicing over his brother's salvation. That's what the workers in the vineyard complained about when they objected to the workers who showed up for the last hour being paid the same as them. Being a Christian means you don't view salvation as a transaction or a deal. Salvation is a merciful gift of God we accept through God's grace. It's something we desire for every single person because God desires the salvation of every single person. But our heart cannot be open to God's mercy if we withhold mercy from other people. Jesus said on the Sermon on the Mount, "Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy," which implies that those who are not merciful will not obtain mercy. Jesus makes this same point in the parable of the unforgiving servant when he sums up the lesson. "Then his Lord summoned him and said to him, 'You wicked servant, I forgave you all that debt because you besought me. And should not you have had mercy on your fellow servant as I had mercy on you?' And in anger, his Lord delivered him to the jailers till he should pay all his debt. So also my heavenly Father will do to every one of you if you do not forgive your brother from your heart." As I noted in a previous episode, that doesn't mean we should not be on the lookout for false converts trying to get attention. It also doesn't mean that brand new converts should be a public face of the faith. But it does mean we can't be Christians if we close off our hearts to certain people, like if we treat former female porn producers differently from other sinners and consider them permanently damaged goods. And as I noted in my episode on Father Radcliffe, this also happens among liberals who treat sinners they detest more than others, like neo-Nazis, for example, as being irredeemable and permanently unsafe. Both the far left and the far right can treat people as being beyond the love of God. But in this episode, I'm focusing on when this happens among the right, especially those who want to be based. For example, Calvin Robinson is a conservative commenter who previously served as an Anglican priest, but is now a priest in the Old Catholic Church, a denomination that is not in communion with the Pope. Back in August, he posted a clip with the following caption: "Migrant dinghy crushed by Spanish police boat. It can be done. The Spaniards know how to reconquista." Now, I have defended a nation's ability to deport people and police its borders. You can hold that view while still having a heart that grieves when situations like this happen to migrants. Back in February, drug traffickers ran over a police speedboat in Spain and killed two officers. This kind of maneuver can kill people, and so to gloat over it being done to migrants instead of soberly discussing it expresses a heartlessness that is unbecoming of a Christian. But one of the most heartless things I've seen people, including Christians, express has been a hatred of interracial marriage. This post on X got over 3 million views and thousands of likes for showing an interracial family and simply saying miscegenation, race mixing, is a sin. Or this meme saying the brightest people support abortion for certain races, which is just eugenics. Many of the people saying miscegenation is sinful don't give a reason for why it's sinful, except their own reactive disgust towards interracial children. You can see this in people like John Mondeo II, a.k.a. Handsome Truth, who baits people with racist tirades. Here's an incident where he berates a white mom with a mixed-race child who Mondeo calls a mud shark.
Oh my God! The mud shark!
Mud shark alert!
You made a mistake!
You made a
mud shark! Mud shark!
I truly believe someone with this attitude would walk right out of heaven and into the racially segregated parts of hell, because heaven, with its different races and people who are of mixed race worshiping God altogether, that would be hellish to that person. That's why we should pray for God to rescue those whose hearts have been captured by hate and racial idolatry. Pope Pius XI said those who make an idol out of race are far from the true faith in God. Nazi Germany, for example, was not trying to promote Christianity, but a kind of paganism. And part of this heartless racism comes from a revival of neo-paganism. Consider this response to the X post saying race mixing is sinful. It says, "Miscegenation was always traditionally considered one of the most grievous sins against your family, caste, and ancestors prior to Christianity, which introduced its plebeian values everywhere. Christianity is hardly the sole arbiter of what is or is not sinful." I only have 6 words to say to that. Cope harder, pagan. Jesus is Lord. What makes Christianity, and especially its expression in the Catholic Church, so beautiful is that it's universal. The word Catholic even means universal, kata holos, according to the whole. Our faith is not confined to a culture, a nationality, or a race. It is one faith for the entire human race. And there is only one human race made up of many different and equally dignified ethnicities. That's why the church has never taught that interracial marriage is sinful. The Bible even records an episode where God punished a critic of an interracial marriage. In Numbers 12:1, it says, "Miriam and Aaron," Moses' siblings, "spoke against Moses because of the Cushite woman whom he had married, for he had married a Cushite woman." Cush is another word for Ethiopia, and it refers to black Africans who lived south of Egypt. The Bible recognizes they had unique skin color when it uses the same Hebrew word for Cushite in Jeremiah 13:23. It says, "Can the Ethiopian change his skin or the leopard his spots?" But in Numbers 12, God becomes angry at Miriam for criticizing Moses. It says, "The anger of the Lord was kindled against them, and he departed. And when the cloud removed from over the tent, behold, Miriam was leprous, as white as snow." And in fact, God was saying, "You prefer light skin to dark skin, Miriam? Here, you can have the lightest skin of all." Now that is a based move. The Catholic Church was actually one of the leading advocates to overturn bans on interracial marriage in the United States. In 1948, Catholic couple Andrea Perez and Sylvester Davis sued to overturn a California law that said, quote, "No license may be issued authorizing the marriage of a white person with a Negro, mulatto, Mongolian, or member of the Malay race." Perez was considered white under California law in spite of her Mexican heritage, and she and Davis sued California by claiming that the law inhibited their freedom of religion because they were free to marry in the Catholic Church that they both attended. The U.S. Supreme Court didn't strike down all interracial marriage bans until Loving v. Virginia in 1967. During this period, moral theologians like Father Joseph Doherty addressed this issue in works like his 1949 thesis, Moral Problems of Interracial Marriage. Doherty points out that even theologians who personally discourage interracial marriage considered bans on the practice to be immoral violations of the natural right to marry. But Doherty goes further. Some Catholics claim that while interracial marriage isn't a sin, the church discourages it, and people have a general duty to marry within their own race in order to preserve it. But that's not true. The church doesn't teach that. You can value your own ethnicity as long as you don't idolize it. And you're free to marry someone of your own ethnicity. But the church does not teach that this is the ideal, and the church does not discourage interracial marriage. Some church leaders may have discouraged it in the past, in historical contexts where interracial families experienced severe racist hardship because of unjust laws. But that doesn't mean the interracial unions themselves were undesirable. However, the church does have teachings on other kinds of mixed marriages. For example, the church discourages interfaith marriages when Catholics marry non-Catholics or even non-Christians. This is why permission or a dispensation is needed for those marriages to take place. They are not ideal, but the marriages themselves are not sinful. However, no such permission is needed for interracial marriage. People who defend the view that it's discouraged by the church, they usually end up citing individual theologians or priests who personally discourage race mixing. But this wasn't official church teaching. Or they'll quote church fathers that say you should prioritize your own kin over strangers, which has nothing to do with marrying someone of a different race and is just talking about the principle of subsidiarity. That's why Doherty says, a careful search has failed to reveal any official documents of the church bearing specifically on the morality of interracial marriages as such. So if you care more about being based than about having a merciful heart, then your heart is not prepared to receive God's love for all eternity in heaven. That's true for all of us, which is why we need God's transforming love. We long for the promise of God in Ezekiel 36:26. A new heart I will give you, and a new spirit I will put within you. And I will remove from your body the heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh. When I see someone getting angry at interracial families or porn stars converting, I see someone with a heart of stone, and I pray for God to change his or her heart. By the way, throughout this episode, I've mentioned the human heart a lot, and there's a reason for that. Pope Francis just released a wonderful encyclical called Dilexit Nos, Latin for He loved us, and it calls us to a deeper understanding of the Sacred Heart of Jesus. Some Protestants and even Eastern Orthodox find this devotion strange, but the Pope assures us that, quote, devotion to the heart of Christ is not the veneration of a single organ apart from the person of Jesus. What we contemplate and adore is the whole Jesus Christ, the Son of God made man, represented by an image that accentuates his heart. That heart of flesh is seen as the privileged sign of the inmost being of the incarnate Son and his love, both divine and human. More than any other part of his body, the heart of Jesus is the natural sign and symbol of his boundless love. It also says, when Saint Therese was 15, she could speak of Jesus as the one whose heart beats in unison with my own. 2 years later, speaking of the image of Christ's heart crowned with thorns, she wrote in a letter, you know that I myself do not see the Sacred Heart as everyone else. I think that the heart of my spouse is mine alone, just as mine is his alone. And I speak to him then in the solitude of this delightful heart to heart, while waiting to contemplate him one day face to face. If you're jealous that you followed all the rules, but other people got to sin and had a conversion later in life, you need to spend some time with Jesus. The real jealousy comes from people like me, who lived a life apart from God for years or decades and missed out on so many graces. So trust me, Saint Therese is not jealous that Saint Augustine got to have a wild life. Instead, Saint Augustine has a holy jealousy, an admiration, if you will, that Saint Therese always knew the heart of God, even when she was a child. Many people become heartless on the internet because it's an inhuman, depersonalizing space. It reduces other people to images and avatars to argue with and dunk on. But that's not what we were made for. I'll leave you with these wise words from Pope Francis. In this age of artificial intelligence, we cannot forget that poetry and love are necessary to save our humanity. No algorithm will ever be able to capture, for example, the nostalgia that all of us feel, whatever our age and wherever we live, when we recall how we first used a fork to seal the edges of the pies that we helped our mothers or grandmothers to make at home. It was a moment of culinary apprenticeship, somewhere between child play and adulthood, when we first felt responsible for working and helping one another. Along with the fork, I could also mention thousands of other little things that are a precious part of everyone's life. A smile we elicited by telling a joke, a picture we sketched in the light of a window, the first game of soccer we played with a rag ball, the worms we collected in a shoebox, a flower we pressed in the pages of a book, our concern for a fledgling bird fallen from its nest, a wish we made in plucking a daisy. All these little things, ordinary in themselves yet extraordinary for us, can never be captured by algorithms. The fork, the joke, the window, the ball, the shoebox, the book, the bird, the flower, all of these live on as precious memories kept deep in our heart. This profound core, present in every man and woman, is not that of the soul, but of the entire person in his or her unique psychosomatic identity. Everything finds its unity in the heart, which can be the dwelling place of love in all its spiritual, psychic, and even physical dimensions. In a word, if love reigns in our heart, we become, in a complete and luminous way, the persons we are meant to be. For every human being is created above all else for love. In the deepest fiber of our being, we were made to love and to be loved. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a very blessed day.